Here's the first question. What is one of the most practical, powerful tools you implement daily in your relationship to improve communication and overall quality of your marriage? And I'll repeat that. What is one of the most practical and powerful tools you implement daily in your relationship to improve communication and overall quality of your marriage? And I'll leave this one, anyone, you know, all of you can answer, or one, however y'all want to do it.
You know, for me, and I think for us as a whole, every day we try to take that time. You know, in the morning we kind of review each of our days. We talk about, well, I've got this appointment, I've got this, I've got that. And then in the afternoon we come together and we take some time to just, we talk about what's going on and where we're at, but we also take time just to be quiet together. You know, that sense of just sharing space with no distractions. The phones are off, the TV's off, but just that silence together kind of just takes that energy level down. And we have, you know, some pretty busy, chaotic lives sometimes. And it's just that little bit of time. And, you know, I'm not talking a huge amount of time. I'm talking 30 minutes, an hour on a good day, of just kind of reconnecting with yourself and with your partner.
Jenna, what I'd add to that would be this. What we do is we sit there in the morning, right? Now, I'm a servant husband, so I get up before her. I have the coffee ready. And when she comes out, I got her coffee ready to go. When it's cold outside, I'm standing at her chair with a blanket.
I'm very spoiled.
So I do that stuff, but then what we always do, what's practical, is we go over our calendars. So we all live and die by our calendars. I would assume that's the case for all of you. And we go through our calendars together. What do you got going on? And we're not checking up on each other. We are just trying to plan our time for togetherness. Because if we don't do that, so I don't want to make an appointment. So if I'm going to work with some guys and do some steps, I'm going to do it when she's out doing some of her things so that we can keep some sacred time together. Because if you don't plan your time together, you will never have any. Anything to add, Ali?
Thank you. Just, I guess, along the same lines, time spent is very important. Every minute that I get, I tell her I love her and I give her a little kiss and a hug, and that's just so precious and so important. We do things for each other, you know? Like, I don't think there's been a time when I come home and a plate of dinner or lunch is not ready for me. You know, that may be something small to some people, that's a big deal to me, you know? In the mornings, I get up earlier, because Maximov gets up early, so I spend about an hour with him, you know? I do a little prayer with him and mindfulness with him. And like every moment is like, it could be treated as a meditative moment, you know? And then I come to Afsi's room and then we spend some time together with Max. Just time spent is huge. So the only thing I really want to add on to that, like what to do during the day, that's got to be guided and planned and, you know, like a routine, but it's got to come from spirit and guidance rather than from self. Because when it comes from myself, it's like, it never works out. You know, I don't know if that makes sense. When I try to plan it from a place of self-centeredness, even with a good motive, it's got to be guided. And that where my guidance comes from is to this day, every morning, as part of my prayer ritual, is my sane and sound ideal for my future sex life with my wife, for my future relationship with my wife. You know, so every couple years or so, depending on how I'm moved, I recommit to the first 9 steps, and sort of a new sane and sound ideal comes. And this one's last year in bed is just something like this. Every morning, part of my prayers, I say this prayer, something like this. God, if you see fit today, would you please allow me to be honest and authentic with my wife? Allow me to be caring, considerate, kind, and loving to her. Allow me to accept her for exactly who she is and respect her for who she is. Please help me be a man of responsibility and integrity in this marriage. Please help me practice fidelity in my marriage in all forms, God. That's an important part, by the way, in all forms. I haven't, thank God, cheated on my wife, you know, I don't plan to. But when I say in all forms, I mean in all forms. I'm not making myself wrong for it. But even, you know, how some, you know, guys, like sometimes with a lady in a meeting or a grocery store, you might just see somebody and just that interaction, like you say a joke, it's really innocent. There's nothing to it, but just to get that reaction, you know what I mean? To not do that, you know what I mean? And that kind of thing. I remember Don Pritz, One of his CDs I heard, he's like, one litmus test for him is if he's interacting with another lady that's not his wife, yeah, or is would I say and do this thing if my wife, my sister, and my mother right there next, standing next to me, whatever it is, as innocent as may be. So I think that's a huge part for me, to start with that prayer and let God guide me how to behave in this marriage.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. Here's a doozy. There seems to be a popular idea in the rooms that if you cheat on your significant other, you don't have to tell them because it would cause more harm. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. Wow.
Here, let me. Do I need to repeat it?
No, I got it. All right, so here's the deal. I love women. I think they're wonderful. Okay, but I understand that they're God's creatures and that for me to stay sober, I have to practice principles in all my affairs. So if I see an attractive woman, in place of her breasts, I see crack pipes. Because I understand that if I do that, I'm smoking crack, right? So when it comes to the inventory process, when I work with a man, if his wife does not know that he was unfaithful, there is no point in clearing the conscience at her expense. Our book's quite clear about that. However, if you're engaged in infidelity as a clean and sober person, you're pretty much fucked in every direction. Because if you will cheat on that relationship, then the most sacred one, I don't trust that as a friend. I get the people are human. But so you got to have your boundaries. I said already that I've got good relationships with people, right? So I have to find my attraction in my partner. And so me and Don, I'm 68 and 65. We have the best sex life we've had in our entire life, right? I didn't know. I always used to think, I wonder when you stop fucking when you get old. What age? But then I realized it sure isn't yet. But so if... You know, Donna mentioned this in step 9. The most important part of step 9 was change behavior. And to clear your conscience, obviously, if it has risen to a level where she is aware of it, and disclosure is necessary, do so in a healthy way, and I would suggest with professional counseling. Because here's, you know, sex and jealousy are twisted human emotions. And the men that I've known that have come clean, then their wives want to know, well, where did you do it? How did you do it? Was she good? You know what? And they just start spinning down this literal virtual hellhole, you know, into the darkness. So I'm quite clear on this. Like with every man that I work with, like, man, you've got to be true to yourself. And that includes rubbing tugs. There's no way you could go out by the place and get jerked off and think that that's somehow... They're all over the place. In Arizona, man, every strip mall has a massage parlor with the red lights and flashing. Come on in anytime. I don't know what the hell's happening there. But do not disclose to harm another. But if you're cheating on your partner, then you better get back to a first step. And if you don't know how to be faithful, then go to SA. And go get a sponsor there and get the support that you need. For some people I've met that it's like the sex bone's connected to the crack bone. The crack bone's connected to the, you know what I mean? It's all connected. And they're just so spun up that they've been doing so much, you know, porn and so much stuff that's just poisoning them that you got to unravel a whole bunch. So I know what I'm good at, helping people get through the steps and to live with integrity, but sometimes people need a higher level of care, and then I direct them to SA. You good? Donna, anything?
All I got to say is if you think they don't know, trust me, they know. You know, and it's eroding away at your relationship on a level that you may not see, but it will come out, and then it erodes in so many different ways, you know?
So what about disclosure then, Donna?
You got to be careful with it, you know. But I do believe that it has to come out in a healthy way, not out in not vomiting on your partner, you know. But I do believe that there is no way, if you're married or in a committed relationship, that if you're cheating on your partner, there's no way that there's not an undercurrent going on in that relationship that your partner doesn't feel, no matter how, you know, it just happens. Because that intimacy is broken, it's cracked, and it does seep into your relationship. So there are healthy ways of doing it, but just coming out and saying, you know, I cheated on you is creating harm.
All right, so I'm proud to say I don't use Viagra. And the reason that I tell you that, the reason I tell you that is because trust is the new Viagra. There is nothing stronger in a relationship than a trusted, loving partner. And I know that may sound insane to say it, but the reality is where there is trust, intimacy can grow. You know, we're not all just looking for sexual release. That's not the answer. If getting off sexually solved life's problems, our rooms would be empty. But that's not the case, right? So sex can complicate things. So living with compassion and honesty in your relationship and trust. So I'll tell you what, I know what it's like to make amends for infidelity, drinking and drugging. I would hate to think what I would have to say to her or to my children or to my granddaughters if I was cheating on her as a man who just hit my knees and prayed that morning, as a man who's trying to walk with spiritual integrity, as a man who's calling others to live according to the spiritual principles of the 12 steps, that'd be really hard to do. So
awesome.
Thank you.
All right, this is for everybody. How in the world do you make time to participate in the three legacies at the level you do and make time for your wife, your kids, and life's other responsibilities outside of recovery?
I guess I'll go first. First of all, I just have to say this. It's not lost on me. It's just such an honor that Tarek and Terry and Donna would allow me to participate as in Q&A with my minuscule percentage of experience that I have compared to the decades that they have. So thank you for that. Prayer, it's got to be guidance. It's got to be assignment. When I try to manage my life, it just never works out. Like, my ideas don't work out, you know? Like, I hear some people, and I understand the spirit of keeping a balance. I understand the spirit of it. But when I try to keep balance things and plan things, it just self is all over it, and I want something in return. I want to be acknowledged. I'm pissed off when somebody doesn't respond. Right? It's got to be guidance. So prayer is the most important thing in my life. I pray, and I consult with the people that are affected. I consult with my sponsor, one man who I'm transparent with 1,000% about everything. I consult with my wife because she's going to be affected. And then I pray, and we come up with a game plan. I don't say yes to every sponsee. I also understand the spirit of saying yes to everything in AA. But I think if I did that, I wouldn't be living a spiritual life either. So I don't say yes everything to AA. I pray, please let me consider it. I talk to my wife because she's going to be affected. And if the assignment says go, I go. So that's a sort of a general answer.
Yeah, trying to find that balance. You know, is important, and you'll never find total balance. But we check in with each other. We talk about what we've got coming up, and because for us, it's not just a free weekend to do something like that. It's like what's before and after that. And so always, you know, it's important to always be there, but I also have to remember that if I don't take that obligation, it opens it up for somebody else. Mm. And so I have to, because at first I was always like, oh, you know, I've got to do it all. I've got, you know, I have to, you know, when I'm asked, I have to do it all. But if you find that you're doing way too much and you're becoming depleted and your other relationships are suffering, the way that I look at it is when I don't do it, it gives somebody else the opportunity to step up. Maybe somebody that's newer in the fellowship, you know, that hasn't done anything. And I've been, if you watch, if you sit and watch and you see who actually gets, you know, the opportunity to do that, you know, you've just given somebody else an opportunity to be of service. And so that's helped me immensely with it.
How about the pendulum?
No. Yeah. So our lives, it was funny, when he first got sober, he was always gone. Gone, 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 gone. And, you know, it wasn't much different than when he was using. The only thing different was we still had money. Well, we didn't have money in the bank. you know, it wasn't, you know, it was different because at least the paycheck was coming home. And the counselor described it as a pendulum. He said, you know, at first he's always over here getting high, doing all this stuff, and now he's got to come over here and stay on this side, and he's got to commit all this time to his recovery, and he has to make that every bit as important as this side. And then eventually it'll come down more towards the middle, and it will stay there, and it'll go a little bit on this side or a little bit on that side. But eventually it finds its own balance. If we allow and if we're guided, like you were talking about, if we're guided and we listen, it will find its place.
In the Bible, in Ecclesiastics, it says, to everything there is a time and a purpose, a season unto heaven, a time to reap, a time to sow, a time to plant, right? So when I'm new, I need all the recovery I can get. I asked Donna to start Kohanon because the need was so great in Arizona, there was none. I said, will you start? And I'm bringing her sponsees, wives, and trying to, will you start? And she said, you know what? I'm going to help everybody I can, but I'm not going to make that commitment while my children are young. They need me now. And so she was available to the best of her ability. And then when the boys got older, she started Kohanon, and it worked out very well, right? So it's like this. They say never say no to an AA request. I don't agree with that either. I'm with you, Ali. There are times I have to say no. I don't try to travel. I don't go travel to speak places normally unless she's with me, because I didn't go to do this to not be in this, in our relationship. So I'm pretty mindful about wanting to be as present as possible. So if I get a phone call, let's say we're having a Sunday night family dinner, and my sons and my granddaughters, and they're all there. I'm going to stay there and have a beautiful meal. I'm not going to go open up the meeting hall. I'll get somebody else to do it. I'm not going to answer the call. I'll put my phone away so I can be present to my loved ones. However, if I get outreached by someone who is new, and I mean new, I'm not talking about somebody who knows the solution and keeps choosing to get loaded back and forth. And then, you know, that type, men are always in crisis, always in crisis. Their crisis is not my crisis. For someone who doesn't know that the solution exists, that's my problem. And I will go to the ends of the earth. I'll tell my family, hey, I got a role. I got a brand new guy. I got to go see if I can be there for them. But that doesn't happen that often. Even though as deep in it as I am, that doesn't happen that often. There's usually someone else there. And Donna mentioned that when I don't try to be, you know, Captain Recovery, save the day. Here I come to save the day. You know, when I stop trying to play Superman, it gives space for others. One of the concepts is the spirit of rotation. And it's important not to take every space, to leave it open. But you know, in recovery, oftentimes the same people go from trustee to delegate to area chair over and over and over. And they say, well, because nobody's stepping up. Well, they can't step up because your ass is in the seat.
Awesome. Thank you, thank you. Here's another great question. What do you do when your prayer and meditation life becomes stale and nothing seems to be produced, and it's like I'm checking off a checklist?
I think these two talk too much. I got a lot of experience with that. I've been doing this a long time. I've been sober for 33 years and active all 33. I'm a man of faith. I'm a man of prayer. And I love the effects produced by recovery. But I have had periods of time in my recovery where I felt like I was just going through the motions. I just pick them up and put them down and do the meeting and blah, 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 blah. And I do it with almost no connection. And I think that that's human. You know, I don't think everybody, and Bill wrote about this in the 12 and 12, he said that we'll pay for that assumption that any of us will be fully connected all the time. We won't be. But we will be connected eventually. So I like to go to church. So one Easter season, I decided to do the Triduum. That's Holy Thursday, Good Friday, and the Easter Vigil. That's like 9 hours of church in 3 days. I don't normally do that kind of stuff, but I made the decision to do that. And I did it because I wanted to try to learn more about faith and to grow more as a man. So I do all that. And then the next year I go to do it, and I'm sitting there, and I looked up at the cross, and it looked empty. And I felt empty. And so I didn't know what's going on here. I mean, is there anyone there? Hey, God, do you hear me? Hey, God, I'm hurting here. I can't feel you. One of my sponsees shared this, made up a prayer recently. He was going through a wicked divorce. You know, his woman in recovery started cheating on him. She was sober too, right? She went, well, she was whatever you are, but she goes off and cheats on him, and they got a kid, and he's going through a hell of a divorce. And he said, man, I can't. It's like I'm alone in this. I don't feel anything. You're the only one. I don't know what to do. And so he made up a prayer, and it was, get loud, God, because I'm having a hard time hearing you. And that was his prayer. And he just kept saying, get loud, God. I'm having a problem hearing you. The way I dealt with the last period like that is I talked to people about it. I didn't keep it inside, Tarek. I went to somebody and I said, hey, look. So I went to a man who has great spirituality. And I said, bro, I feel empty. And he said, you're in good company. If you read anything about the Buddha, if you read anything about Christianity, if you read anything about Jesus, he talks about being lost in the desert. In fact, in the words of Christ, he said, Father, why have you abandoned me? So he told me all that stuff, and he said, so if the Buddha and Jesus and Muhammad and everybody else felt abandoned by God, it's probably okay. You'll probably be okay. So I use writing as a tool, right? So I sat there and I wrote a poem. I should read it to you, but I won't. But the poem's really quite beautiful. I wrote this poem looking at the cross. And it's, one of the lines was, I look at the cross, there's no one there. Who moved? Was it you? Was it me? I feel so empty and alone. I used to be one, a part of your crew. You know, the host and the chalice, they scare me to death. I'm frightened and lost and stuck in my own way one more time. So when you can put words to your feelings, then somehow the healing comes. But I've never known a single couple that has not had challenges in their marriage. I've never known a single person who hasn't had challenges in their sobriety. I've never known a person of faith who hasn't had St. John of the Cross wrote a book called The Dark Night of the Soul. And the belief is, in the dark night of the soul, that eventually by sticking with the darkness and asking God what is the lesson in this feeling of disconnection, that we form and find a deeper connection. Mm.
By the way, we've thanked a lot of people here. I just want to thank all of you from the bottom of my heart. Without you guys, there would be no retreat. So thank you for taking the time out of your busy lives to be here and to participate in this spiritual conversation. It seems one way sometimes, but it's really not. It's a back and forth of energy, you know. So thank you guys for that. I appreciate and agree with everything that was said, and I just want to take it at a slightly different angle. I have gone through those periods in my relatively short time of being on this path. I want to see what comes to me is that from my experience, I'm grateful that God doesn't keep me sober. I'm grateful that my relationship with God keeps me sober. And I'm grateful that my relationship with God is not dependent on how I feel about it, how connected I feel, or my thoughts around it. I'm grateful that my relationship with God is dependent only and only on the actions that I continuously take, that I sooner or not take, that sometimes I feel like I'm not connected, that it's just a waste of time, that I'm just checking off boxes. Who cares? Who cares? Because the weights in that gym, brother, the physique that you have, that I admire, I want. I really do. I love it, man. I'm telling you.
I'll trade you. Oh,
God bless. God bless you. Grass always greener on the other side. I bet you those weights don't care if Sasha hates working out that day, how he feels, if he feels like he's weak or strong. They don't. It's about the actions that I continuously take. And I'll tell you, I went through the dark darkness of a soul. I'll tell you a story. A couple of minutes here. Mm-hmm. Dark darkness of a soul one time, there was a period I felt that way, man. It was just like mundane. I'm just saying the words, and I'm like, towards the end of the 15 minute of prayers, I'm like, oh, I just come to. It was like automatic, you know what I mean? It just like felt empty, and it just, and all of a sudden, it was, I remember obviously conversations and discussions and looking at things different angle are a part of it, but, and then it was, I remember it was early September 2020, I remember the day, early September of 2022, I had a meditation. When I felt like nothing was connecting, it's just a waste of time. For a few months, I felt that way. And I kept on doing it, right? Trying different things, trying to spice it up, praying about it. I remember a voice really loudly, as Terry has described many times. By the way, it's not audible. Is it audible for you? You hear it in your ears?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah? Okay, so I hear, it's like the cells in my body here. You know? Yeah. It's like, it's just loud, right? Screamed at me. This is the last day of your life. How do you want to be remembered? What do you want to pack into this life, stream of life? And so what happened to me that was so special in that meditation is that concept that we all have experienced and we all live into at different times during our lives, it went from my head to my heart, where like for the next 3 weeks, from the moment I would open my eyes, I would feel like I'm on 5 hits of ecstasy. To the moment I close my eyes. I would just walk smiling, and I just wanted to give people love. Just wanted to give people love. And I walk into to gas stations to put gas or like coffee shops, and people would turn around and just smile at me. For 3 weeks it lasted. This came from a dark night of a soul, right? And then on September the 29th of 2022, I was at the gym. I used to work out. And I was doing my max. And all of a sudden, I had a spotter. I hear pop, pop. All the tendons that connect to the chest muscles, they are ripped right off. Yeah, oh yeah. So thank God I had a spotter. He just saved my neck from being crushed, so he pulled it off of me, right? And then my arms were like this. I'm in shock and pain. Everything's like, right? So note to self, next time something like that happens, call an ambulance, because they give you pain medication right away. In the emergency room, you have to wait. Oh my God. So we go there. The whole time, he's driving me, and I didn't realize I'm saying something under my breath. I didn't realize I'm saying, I'm praying. And he's like, what are you saying? And I just realized, like, I'm praying for usefulness. I'm just emotional because that's not what my automatic used to be. You know what I mean? I just want to take, God, can you just please help me be useful? Please help me be. That's what I'm praying for. Right? We go into the emergency room, and then, you know, anyways, long story short, I ended up, the surgeon say, like, we've never seen this before, right? So, I had surgery, I think, two. For some reason, the only surgeon that could really do a good job, he was on vacation. I had to wait 3 weeks for him to come back, so I was in a brace. Anyways, so from that, I was at home for about 3-4 months. I couldn't work. I couldn't clean myself. I couldn't feed myself. I couldn't wash myself. And I kept on praying for usefulness. And God would put sponsees in my path. New men on Zoom and on the phone, on Zoom mostly, you know. And I would get lessons like, there's a point to this, where I would get lessons like, you know, I'm on pain meds, right? And a little bit, I'm irritated sometimes. And then I would just bark at my wife sometimes. I remember one time I did that, and she just walked out of the room, and my 10-year-old, he was 22, he was 8 at that time, he walks into the room, he looks at me, he sits down beside me, he puts his hand on my knee, he's like, Daddy, you know, do you realize that mommy makes us food even when her back hurts? I was like, that's what love looks like. So the whole point of that is that whether I feel it or don't feel the prayer meditation, so long as I keep taking the action, God puts me in place where I can experience them more and more and more on a deeper level. You know what I mean? That feeling of ecstasy, I've chased it, it's gone. It never happened since. It hasn't. I don't think it'll ever happen again for 3 weeks. But you know what stayed with me? The knowing that God is. And he doesn't care how I feel in that sense. You know what I mean? Just like the sunshine doesn't discriminate, it doesn't care who I am, what I do, the mistakes that I've made in my life. Sunshine just shines. Grace doesn't care. I just got to continue to take the actions no matter how I feel about it. That's just my experience.
Thank you.
All right. I'm not sure if this is a good question. This is what the person wrote, or even if it is a question, but it's really been on my mind for the past couple of weeks. The Serenity Prayer. Accepting I get, the courage to change I'm working on, but my biggest thing is the discernment of the knowledge to know the difference, and it seems to be the biggest part. The prayer seems so simple, but it has owned me over the past couple of weeks. Can you please shed some light on this and how you practice the discernment portion of knowing the difference in the Serenity Prayer?
Okay, so one of the things that I do when I distance run, when I train, is I say prayers. And I spend a tremendous amount of time with prayers. So I will say God, and what is God? To me, God is the face of the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous. Grant me, in other words, I can't give it to me, so the power of your love, that's how God shows up. God shows up for me through your love. So the power of your love gives me the serenity. I don't grant myself the serenity. So I just break prayers down like that. I could do the Lord's Prayer, and it'll take 2 hours to do the Lord's Prayer, to sit with these things. So I think the only answer I could possibly give would be, these clouds of unknowing are where God exists. It's some of the most fertile ground you'll ever have spiritually. So that's a great question to have come up. But the only person that's going to be able to answer that is you through your own work and your own experience.
Sorry, the question was, I just went away for a second there. The discernment between the...
Knowing what's right and wrong.
What's right
knowing the difference. You know, God grant me the serenity, accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can.
And the wisdom.
It's the wisdom part of the difference.
Gotcha. Make mistakes. Through making mistakes. Because God doesn't make too hard terms. Thank God, you know? Thank God for that. So just... that Thomas Merton poem, I think you read it, right? I think God, the only thing that God cares about is my desire to please him, just to be a better person. And I get to make mistakes. And then just through the continuous working of this way of life, everything that we do, to strengthen that voice, that intuition. When I start to hear it louder, I start to trust it more and more. So, and the only way to do that is to make mistakes. And God doesn't make too hard terms.
So what I'd add to that would be that technique I taught you, where you take whatever it is that you're struggling with, whatever you need, put God in front of it. God, help me to understand what this difference is. Start to say that every day, and then write the responses, because God is listening. And you'll get your responses.
All right. Here's another doozy. I am new in recovery, and my spouse is still angry and venomous about what my addiction did to our family. But she also gets just as angry and venomous when I'm away from home at meetings and with my sponsor. Do you have any suggestions?
Oh, boy. That was me. That was me, you know? And all I can say is I was so tired of hearing the words, you know, I'm sorry, not going to do it again. Your words mean absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. You know, your actions mean absolutely everything. And so, you know, it takes time. Man, it takes time. It takes time for that, the belief that this is going to change, that life can be better. It takes time to feel that, you know. And so patience and you know, show by your actions that things are going to be different. You know, I don't know if I would still be here if all he did was just go to meetings and expect me to be better. He was accountable for his actions. He let me know where he was going. He let me know what he was doing. I met his friends. I knew the people he was with. Invite the person in. You know, invite your loved ones in, because he was gone. And, you know, like I said, I called the counselor. I was pissed. I'm like, can you send him home? He graduated from the treatment center, and he still hangs there every night. And because that's where he was comfortable. And I didn't understand that. I wanted everything to be better today. And so it takes kind and gentle and consistency. You know, there's a lot of damage that has to heal. There's a lot of faith that has to come back. You know, that trust has been torn away, and it's painful. And so, you know, I love the part in the big book where, you know, after the tornado comes out and says, hey, Ma, ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing. You know, and there's so much more reconstruction, but it takes time. It takes patience. And the you know, just being accountable for your actions. And, you know, tell your partner to go to a meeting. That does not go over well. just letting you know, saying, hey, babe, you should go to a meeting. You know, but invite your partner in. Invite your partner to go to open meetings. That was a life changer for me. I heard the hope. And it just takes time for that to dissipate, because there's so much fear behind that. There's so much fear that this isn't real, this isn't true, it's not going to last. And, you know, every time you go back out, it's like taking the rug that your partner's standing on and just pulling it out from underneath them. They're flat on their back. So, you know, we guard ourselves with that. We guard it by anger. We guard it, you know, we don't want you to get too close. We just don't trust. And so, you know, patience, and invite your partner in.
The thing I would add to that is this. I've made the point when I come home from meetings to thank Donna. Thank you for staying in my life. I still tell her that all the time, because I've seen what this disease does to relationships. There's other things that I do. I started making the bed as a prayer meditation, like I shared with you. I do dishes. I participate. I wrote some inventory questions, and one of the questions was, do you know where the dishes go in your house? Because I realized I didn't know where mine went. And so here's the thing. I have never met, I've met plenty of people that don't really feel very good about their partner's recovery. And if you're new, everything's natural. But that occurs sometimes with a lot of time. That's a sign to check yourself. You know, is Donna benefiting from my work in recovery? And if she and our home life is better, our finances, our hopes, our dreams are all better, then recovery becomes an integral part of our life. But if all I do is go and nothing at home ever changes, I really need to look at myself in a new way.
All right, let's continue with the heavy questions. Do you believe that a relationship with God can treat depression and anxiety?
My experience has been, for me it has. I did a talk a couple years ago on Zoom. They asked me to do a topic, so I sat with it for about a couple of months, and then what came was my alcoholism and depression. So I did a whole talk on it. A lot of experience with it. I have maybe 5 times tried to kill myself, maybe 5 to 7 times. Four of those times they called Christ for help. They seem real to me. 3 of those times they called it probably a serious suicide attempt. I've suffered from depression and recovery, you know. And Sandy Beach does a great talk on that. I forget exactly, but one of the lines he uses is from his experience in Alcoholics Anonymous, he's experienced that there's 2 types of depression. I don't know how scientific this is, but his experience has been mine. There is the clinical depression that any human being can suffer from, hormonal imbalances, whatever. I don't know too much about that. And if someone needs pain medication, they should have it. I did for a while, right? And then there's the spiritual depression, which is a sense of separation from source, which is playing God, which is not being okay with what is. That was my, so a big source of my depression was my spiritual depression, you know? So I had to get help for my whatever was going on, right? I was on pills for a while and therapist, and slowly I'm off all pills. And if you are, there's nothing wrong with that, absolutely. But that's where I really grew. I really grew from that. I like continuously just cleaning house, trusting God, helping others, being transparent. God, can you please use me? Can you please use me? See, because when my life becomes about usefulness and purpose, I can get through anything. Because in the economy of God's world, nothing is wasted. Nothing is wasted. I remember going through a deep depression, man. Just like, I remember praying, meditating, just like, and a sponsee would call. I'm just like, I just don't want to answer this. And then something inside of me is just pick it up. So I pick it up, and there's another man on the other line who's going through a depression, right? I get to share about myself and what I'm trying to do, and you know, just be transparent. And both of us are uplifted at the end of that call, you know. And what I realized is this. I mean, there's so much I could share on it, but I won't. What I realized is this. One of the major things that I came away with through every valley in life, by the way, that depression is just gone. Just clean house, trust God, help others, get medical help if I need to. Clean house, trust God, help others. What I realized is that half the battle in anything that any negative experience that I have, let's say depression, half the battle is me making it wrong. Why is it? Why am I? I shouldn't be. Why not? Why not me? Did you not say, God, build with me, do with me whatever you want? Did you not say, take me? You build, I destroyed my life. Take away my difficulties as you see fit and make me useful. Why not? I can tell you from that depression, God has used me to help lots of people around me who also suffer from depression, who felt like they're somehow not doing things right in AA, and they're not enough. You know what I mean? Why not? later. So that's the, what I think the major lesson, if I could share, is that making the experience wrong. When I accepted it, so God's will. God, me and Tarek had this conversation a while ago. My brother, we're on the same wavelength here. I used to be confused about God's will, you know, but that was self. Like, what's God's will for me? Take this job or that job? Date this girl, that God's will, right? Usually I was confused because the question came from a self-centered place, right? What's in it for me? How am I going to feel about it? But you know what's written all peppered all over this big book and all over the stories of all people that I share? God's will is very, very clear. No confusion at all. God's will is for me to stay close to him and help his kids. Now, the details of that he'll give me on a daily basis, right? But I'm very clear with that, you know? So no matter what I'm going through, remember, torn tendons, dying from pain, God make me useful, God make me useful, right? No matter what I'm going through, the depression, God, can you just help me please be useful? Just help me be useful, whatever this is. So that's just my experience.
Thank you. Donna, you want to add anything on that? Okay, so I've got a great advantage in that I've been sober for a long time and been active and sponsored tons of men and have all along. And it kind of, what do you do when God says no? You know, what do you do when the program says you're going to be happy, joyous, and free, rocketed to the fourth dimension, and you work your steps, and you go to meetings, and you help others, and then you feel like you want to kill yourself, or you feel depressed and shitty, and nothing changes that. So I was taught a story by my old wise sponsor, Howard, legend in AA. And the story was this. It was a guy bought a ranch, and he went to the ranch, and he dug a well 30 feet deep and didn't strike water. So he goes to a different part of the ranch, drills 30 feet deep, doesn't get water, goes to another spot, drills, no water, finally sells the ranch. The guy who buys the ranch goes and drills a hole 40 feet deep and strikes water. And the moral of that story, because it was a similar question, I had asked him about a man I was working with who kept falling into deep depression regardless of the good work that we did. And his answer was what? Go deeper in the steps. One more trip through. Do more. I thought, what a great answer. So I told my guy that story. Well, let me tell you what the reality is he got sicker and more depressed and more broken. And I now today know that that was a great story, but it's bullshit in application. Because the reality is each one of us are different. We all suffer from different biological, chemical things that occur inside our body. I'm fortunate that in my life, the 12 steps and working with others in service have been able to keep my depression, you know, in between the lines of madness or life. But I've been able to keep it between the lines. I've known many who it's gone off the rails. I have a friend of mine right now who every 2 years or less ended up in a psych ward on suicide watch. One of the best guys I know in recovery. Is he doing something wrong? Because that's what... Somehow we've got some bullshit idea that in the rooms of AA, there should be a banner here. It doesn't say, you know, somebody you talked about lollipops and rainbows and unicorns. Really, the banner ought to be life happens here. You know, because it does. And sometimes life gets so hard, I can barely breathe. And when it gets hard like that, that's where, like Ali said, you seek professional help. You try to go to God. You try to get the relief. But like Bill wrote in the book, they gave us competent psychiatrists. I have a nephew who fell off the rails. Literally during the beginning of COVID, he was a special ed teacher working with disabled kids. And he was good at it. And every night he'd take a couple pills and drink a couple drinks. That was his deal. Smoke some weed. That's his jam. He's done it his whole life. He saw he was losing the kids that they didn't learn through Zoom during COVID. So he made the decision to stop everything cold turkey and did, and he fell into a depression like I've never seen. Here is a handsome guy, good athlete, beautiful wife, two sons, and he stops shaving, he stops bathing, he stops anything. And so it sent me as I was his, like, I'm like a second father to this person. And I started to think, what can be done? So we tried it all, man. I know cats that stand in singing bowls, and they got bowls so big, and they'll ring that bowl, ooh, change the energy. There is tremendous work that's being done, even with ECT, electroshock therapy. You know, it's not like what it was in Silence of the, or whatever that, you know, it's not One Floor of the Cuckoo's Nest anymore. The point is there's situational depression, a loved one, bad health, continued illness. That creates situational depression. That's normal. But when it becomes so big that the steps in God don't seem to be able to relieve it, be open to, I was taught this by my naturopath. I'm on zero medications. When you go to a doctor, they're shocked. And I have a naturopath, and he told me, Terry, you are your own primary care physician. You're responsible for your health. The doctor didn't put you on shit. So I have to be responsible for my own health. So what I do with men is I have them write out, where are you at? You know, what are the circumstances and events in your life right now? And here's what you're doing with the program. Let's take another trip through the steps. And if that doesn't work, then let's go see a shrink. And then let's try this drug. And if that drug doesn't work, go off that one and start a new one. Because if you're not your primary care physician, you can end up on five or six different meds, and you're taking so many pills, and you don't know whether to shit or wind your watch. And so there are a lot of things that are being done. Me and Donna are seekers. We went to go see Paul Stamets, who's the world's leading expert on the use of microdosing of mushrooms. I don't microdose. I don't suggest it. But I'm telling you what, that the man who kept ending up in the place wanting to kill himself started microdosing. He said, what do you think? I'm his grand sponsor. He says, what do you think? I said, brother, I would do that in a heartbeat with what you've been going through. And he started taking that. And you know what happened? That cat hasn't wanted to kill himself in the past 3 years. He's still just as active in AA. So I'm not advocating for any kind of a treatment for you. I'm just saying that nobody else can do your life, your glories, your joys, or your sorrows. And sometimes the problem gets so big that we have to get help.
Thank you so much for saying that, Terry. Like, sometimes I agree, just piggybacking what he's saying. This is misconception in AA. We become doctors all of a sudden. Right? What degree do you have? Right? So that concept that, like I talked about it, I think, last night, what came out was, that this is a treasure map and not the treasure. So if I think that God only exists and his instructions only exist in the bookends of this big book, then I'm dead in the water, man, right? Because if God is everything, then go to that doctor, go see that psychiatrist, microdosing, that's all God. It's all messages from the messenger. I do the 12 steps not to worship the 12 steps, to get in touch with the power who's going to give me guidance in my life. Now, if that guidance comes from Lindsay, who says, you know what, I have a sister that went and saw that doctor and took this medication, she's doing, then that's God. Then I follow the spiritual breadcrumbs, you know what I mean? And what I have learned is that when I've gone through my depression, to share it with people, my sponsor, my wife knows, and people that understand, that have had the experience of it, you know? Sometimes it's like, I don't think everything should be shared with everybody. I really don't think so. I think that, I think I'm done.
That was beautiful. Yeah. Spiritual breadcrumbs. Holy damn, I love that.
All right, so we're not going to be able to get through all the questions, but here's another good one. When life seemed not worth living, What was your greatest moment of hope or the person that carried you through those dark times? When life seemed not worth living, what was your greatest moment of hope or person that carried you through the dark times?
You know, through all of this, I became immensely suicidal after I lost our son and we split up. And, you know, the one, I was speaking to somebody yesterday about this, for me, the one person that kept me connected to this earth was my son. And the reason for that was he was out doing whatever he was doing, and if I were to kill myself, that poor baby would have been left with someone who couldn't even take care of himself, let alone, you know, a three-year-old. And so there's always that tether. There's always that tether to earth. And it's really important to not lose that thread to why you are here. And it can be so many different reasons of what keeps you here. But understanding there is something that's keeping you here. And to hold tight to that, you know, to just know that you have a purpose. You know, there's always a purpose for being here.
Just very quickly, it's funny that you said that, Donna. So I was, I can't remember how long, well, Darius is 10. He was 6 months old. I was going through a deep depression. I couldn't find a job that I could help support my family. And my wife, she didn't understand depression. She was on the other end of the spectrum. She's anxious. So what she would perceive my depression would be, I'm taking advantage. I don't want to go to work, you know. But I was just like, for 3-4 days, I couldn't get out of bed. And I would get out and just wash up and go do what I had to do. So she would yell at me in the mornings from fear. She didn't know, like, what are you doing? I would go into a deeper depression. So I remember that one time I just went to the basement and I just wanted to not be here, man. I just don't want to be here. And I didn't know what else to do. So I was just praying, God, just please take this away and make me useful. You know, what do you want me to do here, God? And all of a sudden the thought came of Darius's face, 6 months old, how me ending my life would affect this kid and the pain that it would bring. And then the next thought came, drive yourself to the emergency room. My wife didn't believe me. She thought I was exaggerating, right? But she understands now. So I drove myself to the emergency room and just, so I love what you said. There's always a thread, right? You never know what God's using you to keep you grounded. Hold on. Stay. Thank you for that.
In my contribution to that, I thought about it. I've had so many angels. I've had so many people that have met me right where I was, which oftentimes was in the darkness. But as I tried to search my experience for an adequate answer to such a deep question, the only thing that came to me was pain, because my pain drove me to God. And it's been through that that everything else has happened. And I believe that God turns pain into power. And man, some of the times, right? When my little granddaughter, right, with that diagnosis, that was pain beyond words, right? But it was the pain that drove me to share my story to seek solution. And we all walk around with a certain amount of it, you know. And just recently, Nora had a surgery, right? Her tonsils or adenoids and tubes put in her ear. And she's little, right? She's 2. So she doesn't really comprehend pain, but she has great love. And she was just approved recently for this new drug. And this drug is an injection that keeps the growth plates open in the arms and the legs for people with achondroplasia. What dwarfism is, it's a full-size body but small legs and small arms. And I watched my son and his wife wrestle with the decision, whether or not to get our granddaughter these shots every day. Because one, they're going to cause her pain. But the other is they wanted her to know, first and foremost, that she is okay just how she is, loved by them. But the overriding decision was to accept the shots because what it could give her. And now what it could give her is maybe 2 or 3 more inches of height. That doesn't mean shit to most of us. But to a little person, that could be the difference between driving a car or being able to wipe yourself after you go to the bathroom without a tool. And so when she was going through this, I was so racked with fear and so much pain because I got to hold her when she get those shots, or Donna does. And so she trusts us. You walk up to her with the needle and you just go like that, and she's totally cool with it till she feels the pain. And I thought, is this pain going to crush her spirit? That was my big fear. But what we've discovered is that her spirit is so much stronger than her pain. And I think that's true for all of us. So pain is what drives me to God. God turns our pain into his power, and his power heals the world.
How did you get through infidelity and rebuild trust in your relationship?
Ooh. A lot of time. And a lot of prayer.
One more question after this.
Again, it takes being accountable, and it takes two people to work on that. And he did his part, he did his part in allowing me the space to heal. Now, we also split up for almost 2 years. And I did counseling on my own to work on some of that pain and where it had taken me. But it also takes the willingness to let go and forgive. Because if I were to continually, no matter what he's doing, stay stuck in my pain and treat him out of that pain and continually bring up the past, we couldn't have healed. So it takes me being willing to have the faith and to trust God and to trust him to do the right thing. And I have to just walk in that blind faith that it's going to be okay and not continue to react to it and treat him out of it, and to trust God and to trust that, we can heal through it.
So our actions speak louder than our words, right? But I use words of loving affirmation. And I didn't try to fix Donna. I didn't try to steer her healing. That was between her and God. But Donna also, in all these years, has never punished me for it. She's, it's remarkable to see what she's done. And she touched on the power of forgiveness. And I read a book called Everybody's Got Somebody to Forgive. And it had a story in the book of a police officer in South Africa named de Klerk. And during the horrible times of apartheid, he had gone into this village and had taken this husband away from this woman and murdered him along with the other police. And then they burnt his body so that no one could find the body. And then he later did the same thing to her only son, the same man. And when Nelson Mandela took over South Africa, they wanted vengeance. The people were pissed. But he said, we need reconciliation more than we need vengeance. And he started what were called reconciliation commissions. You should read about them. Mind-blowing. And what they did is they would have a court, and the family who was wounded by the officers got to say their piece. And they got to help pass a sentence upon the person. So de Klerk is on the stand admitting to have taken the husband to this place and burn him, and the son to the same place and burn him. And when it was the mother's turn to share, she said, "Here is the punishment that I would like to pass on you. I want you to go to that place where you burnt my husband and my son and bring me some of that earth so I can finally have a place to bury him, to bury them. And the other thing I want is I want you to come to my house every Sunday for dinner because you took away everyone I love and I have no one else to love or to cook for, so I want that to be you." He passed out. The courtroom burst into applause and became a worldwide news story. The power of forgiveness. The Lord's Prayer we say at the end of our meetings. And forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Hey, Donna is an emblematic example of that in my life and in this world. It's about forgiveness.
Oh, all right. Let's see here. Which one? This is for all of you, since you're all in long-term relationships. How have you navigated through the different seasons of your relationship? For example, you love your partner, but you don't think you're in love with them, and sometimes you don't like them very much. You seem to criticize each other on a regular basis. The sex life has fallen off, and the relationship has become more of a business partnership.
You want to start?
No, I want to listen. Please.
You know, I like how they phrase the seasons of a relationship, because relationships do have seasons, you know. You start out with this this physical attraction, and you get into these relationships, and they're great, you know. And then you get married, you have kids, and your life changes. You know, that spontaneity changes. Your intimacy changes, you know, because you've got somebody that now you have to pay attention to besides yourselves. And you have to go deeper in that relationship. And, you know, we've been married for a long time. And, you know, I went through a phase where I woke up and I'd look at him and go, "God, is he still here?" You know? And because there was that feeling of, okay, I'm in this for the long run, but I'm just not feeling it right now. And a lot of the women I work with go through this same thing, and I think it's human nature. You know, your relationship's not always gonna be up here. You know, sometimes it's gonna be down here, but it's just like we were talking about prayer and meditation and your connection with God. You keep putting one foot in front of the other and keep doing the next right thing. And so a lot of times, I do a gratitude list with all my sponsees, and I invite everybody in our meeting to do the same thing every year. And Terry has started a Facebook group on it. And it's five blessings, right? Five things you're grateful for every single day. And when I start doing that, and I start looking at, and I always have two things have to be about my partner. And it can be as simple as, you know, he said thank you today. You know, I like the way he smiles, whatever. And so, but you have to really start looking for what you like about your partner. Because, you know, you got to come up with a different thing every day from Thanksgiving to New Year's. And instead of, we always look at what we're not getting, you know. I'm not getting this, I'm not getting that. And when we focus on that, nothing is right in our relationship. Because I'm always focusing on how he can do better. Not what I can do, what I'm not getting, how he can do better. But when I start focusing on the blessings of the relationship and I start looking for the good in the relationship, that starts to grow. And so, you know, I think we all go through that. Man, it's just relationships get stale. Start dating, you know, do something fun. I was talking to my son the other day, and he was telling me that him and his wife, you know, they've been married for a couple years, and they've got, you know, their daughter or his daughter that they share. And, you know, they're starting to date again. And she plans at one time, and then he'll plan it the next, and it's a surprise. Just things that bring some of that back. But for me, it's that daily gratitude of looking for why I'm still here. What keeps me with him instead of what he's not doing, what I'm not getting. Because whatever you focus on is going to grow. I mean, that is just the way life is. If I focus on the negative, I'm going to have a shitty life. If I focus on something that's good, that's where my attention goes. That's where my emotions go. You can't have a bad day when you start looking at what's good in your life.
Okay, cool. So the first question was about how do you keep it strong and plan time together? So what we do is, we said we go through our calendar. We also plan our intimate times, because when we're first dating, you know, you go out, have fun, party, go home, make love. That's how it worked, right? But then as children come in, you know, as life changes, as you get older, whatever, you don't have that same deal. So we plan our intimacy together. There was a great song one time that went, "Afternoon Delight." And so you plan your time. We plan our intimacy. It doesn't take away from it, because intimacy is into me, I see. So I'm responsible for my own emotional, physical, spiritual, and sexual health. And Donna's responsible for hers. And so what we do is, we tend to our marriage, just like I said, I tend to my recovery. I go to meetings, I read the literature, I work with others to tend to my recovery. I have a marriage. I tend to my marriage the same way I tend to my recovery. The same way you tend to a garden. And when you tend to something, you got to realize that we're blessed. If you're fortunate enough to be in a relationship, look around the next meeting you go into and see how many people are going home alone and how much they would love to share this precious thing. But it takes tremendous amounts of work. The only place that you will find success before work is in the dictionary. It takes work to be married. So I do kind, loving, considerate things. Donna, how often do I tell you how beautiful you are?
All the time.
All the time. And to me, she is. Because I focus on what I love about her. And we work through our difficulties, but we lean into it. Everything requires work. It doesn't matter. You know, I want to share a Bill Wilson story real fast. Bill got delivered in Towns Hospital by a blinding white light. He felt the wind of spirit. He said the wind was more of spirit than of air. And he said, so this is the God of the preachers. The great reality is the room was bathed in white light. Is that how God came to you? Not how he came to me. He came to me through a chubby-ass dude in a pawn shop. So that's how God came to Bill. And the first thought that came to Bill in the moment of that spiritual experience was, he knew he had been relieved of his alcoholism, and he thought, perhaps there are others who would want what was just freely given to me, and they in turn may give it to others. That was the spiritual experience. So then, knowing your history, Bill finds himself in the lobby of the Mayflower Hotel. They were broke, it was the Great Depression, and his business deal had just fallen apart. And he's standing in the lobby of the hotel, not knowing if he's going to have enough money to pay the bill at the hotel, and he hears the crowd inside the bar, the clinking of the glasses, and thinks, maybe I'll go in for a ginger ale. And knows he's on thin ice, and he goes to a payphone and takes one nickel and puts it in and calls a church randomly random my ass, and he called and was connected with the Reverend Walter Tunks, who connected him with Henrietta Cyberline, who the very next day connected him with Dr. Robert Holcomb Smith. All of our parents. So the reason I tell you that story is here Bill was visited by God in such a dramatic way, but still was rocked to his core months later. So the moral of that story is that I cannot, and you hear it said all the time, you cannot stay sober on yesterday's recovery. You cannot stay married on yesterday's love. Life is for the living. So I made a decision, having had a spiritual awakening. That means I'm not asleep anymore. And that awakening is this, that if I'm going to be sober, I want to love being sober, because it's easier to do sobriety when you love it than when it is when you hate it and you got to drag your ass to a meeting. And I decided if I'm going to be in a marriage, I want to be in a love affair. And so let me tell you what, when you're in a love affair, the sex takes care of itself. All the difficulties and all the busyness, the two highest areas of divorce are empty, are the first is people with small children, and the second are empty nesters, because they work their whole life caring for the kids, and all of a sudden they're gone, and they look, and who the fuck are you? And it's and it's divorce time. So it's about the work that we do. It's about the work that we do in every aspect of our life that builds a life worth living. So wherever you're at in your life, love it. That's what's happening anyway. If you're single, love that until you're not. If you're in a relationship, learn how to love your partner. Express the gratitude that's in your heart. I tell her how beautiful she is. I am awestruck at her beauty. Donna went away on a retreat with some of her girlfriends. I was out of town doing something. I come back, and Donna and her friends go and get a tattoo. Donna got a tattoo on her ass of a rose. And above it, written in gypsy, was my old gypsy relatives. Their favorite saying was Kaz Ruz Pranazi, which is gypsy for time brings roses. The women at the retreat with her all bet on how long it would take her husband to check out her ass and see that. Now, some of the women said, oh, it'll take him 2 weeks, it'll take him 3 weeks. Donna got undressed. I go, you got a tattoo on your ass. I saw it instantly because I'm always checking that ass. And I saw that tattoo right away. And you know what my first comment was? Do you remember what it was?
You asked me if I was leaving you.
No, that wasn't it. If my mind right away, the disease mind said, I hope it doesn't say, see you, motherfucker. I thought that would be an epic, like, jam. But my first words were, how much did that dude pay to get that close to your ass? So then I called my sponsor, Father John B., and I said, John, you're not going to believe this, but my 60-year-old wife just went and got a tattoo on her ass of a rose, and it says Kaz Ruz Pranazi. And he says, that's a sign from God to stop and smell the roses. It's on you, brother. Bring us home.
So to ask me, with my 11 years of marriage, to share my experience next to these two with 46 years of marriage, it's like asking a three-year-old about calculus when Einstein's giving his theory of relativity. All I'll say is that see to it that your relationship with him is right and great things will come to pass.
Thank you for incredibly outstanding questions. I just want everybody to walk away with the knowing that we're all a part of something very special this weekend, and to be very grateful for it when you communicate with your higher power, because this was a special weekend. Thank you so much from the bottom of my heart. Thank you so much.